Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You're listening to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, their supportive husbands who've agreed to read along with them. I'm John.
I'm Con.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm Kyle.
And welcome to episode 3 of our Throne of Glass book club. Read along with us as Lauren and Kyle experience the series for the first time, guided in discussion by myself and Con as we reread the series altogether, and it's one of our all-time favorites.
In this episode, we are discussing book 1 of the Throne of Glass series, chapters 36 through 55. This is a book club style podcast, meaning that there will be no spoilers for future chapters or books in this series. If you've only read book 1 of Throne of Glass, this is a safe space to process while we discuss.
Yes, so if you don't know why we are all shouting at Selena to put the wine glass down, go read the rest of the end of the first Throne of Glass book and come back so we can talk about it all. Additionally, this is your mild content warning as we will be discussing themes from this book that include creepy demons and a nice makeout sesh. This episode will include a brief name pronunciation guide with myself, a chapter recap from John, initial reactions and favorite moments, followed by Lauren and Kyle's final thoughts on book 1 of the Throne of Glass series and theories for the rest of the books.
And before we get started, make sure you rate, review, and follow the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you want more bonus content, early access to episodes, a community of other book lovers, live events, merch discounts, and much more, check out our Patreon. While you're checking out all those things, make sure you stop by our website, betweenpagesandfriends.com, for our merch. We're always adding new items and updating all our links there.
One of our favorite things is seeing all the messages that you guys write us and send us. It's so encouraging, and it just inspires us to keep going and doing all the things that we're doing. And so one of my favorites from this week was from Jody Jackson. She wrote, "I love your Insta page. Thanks for the community y'all have built. I also read with my best friend, and it's just so much fun." This just meant so much to me because that's how Con and I started, which was just reading together and decided to start this Bookstagram page. And here we are. And now we have our Petering Book Club through Patreon, and we're reading together and doing this podcast, and it's just brought it all together. So thanks so much, Jody, and everyone else. Keep sending us your messages. We love to see it. So let's jump into the pronunciation guide.
Here we go. This pronunciation guide will be a little bit shorter than the first two episodes because this is the kind of wrap up of book 1. So there weren't as many new words and phrases, but here are all of the new pronunciations we get for chapters 36 through 55. Again, I'm reading these names the way they are pronounced in the audiobooks read by Elizabeth Evans. So we have the Ritterak is the name of the creature, demon, whatever you want to call it, that was being summoned for these murders. Nehemia gives Selena a new name, and that name is pronounced Elentia. There was a brief mention of someone named Otho. It's spelled O-T-H-O, so I just wanted to throw that in there. Another brief mention of two names were Lords Urizen and Garnel. These are the two lords who had once hired Selena for the same kill, and she took both of their money. Go off, queen. The last one that I have for today is in chapter 51, Nehemia mentions the other world, which is, I feel like, pretty straightforward, but that was a new phrase. So the other world is the last new thing.
I got them all right for once.
I think I did too.
except Otherworld. I thought it was Utterworld. So my bad, though.
It was a hard one.
So. It was hard.
No, I actually think I did pretty good this time.
Nice. All right. So John's going to keep it rolling with a chapter recap. A lot happened in these chapters. So settle in, everybody.
Yes. This one might be a little longer this time around because so much happened. So we pick up right after Selena finds Nehemia in the library. She speaks perfectly in the common language and then drops a little post-it of word marks that Selena takes. Could she be the one who is summoning the monster? The final test is in 3 days, with the duel 2 days after that. Selena eats a pound and a half of candy, girl after my own heart, but seeing as there are a few to be trusted in the castle and someone offing the champions, probably the dumbest thing that she's done up to this point. We'll actually get into that later. Dorian gifts her the puppy. Selena and Kale fall asleep at church, but let's be real, if you were raised Catholic like me, we've all done it. In the quote-unquote procession of the gods, Selena is blessed by Deanna and gifted a golden arrow. She goes to the ball, even though she's not really allowed. She's under the assumption that Nehemia is going to, you know, loose the monster at the party. Her and Dorian dance and time stops. Some court busybody talking to Kale says of Dorian, he looks like he's in love with her, and Kale kind of panics. Kaltane, looking on, decides it's time to quote-unquote eliminate Lillian/Selena. Dorian and Selena kiss. Oh my god, it's happening. She names the pup Fleetfoot. So cute. Duke Parenton tells Kaltane who Selena really is. Pretty much manipulates her into agreeing to drug Selena before the duel with Kane to give him an edge to finish her off. Selena discovers that the word marks by the murdered bodies summoned the monster, but also was used to transfer the victim's strength to whoever summoned it. She also figures out the timing pattern of a death prior to a test. She figures out that it's probably happening in those tunnels underneath, so she heads down. Guess who she finds? She's right, and she finds Kane summoning the Ritterrack. He traps her in the room with it. She does get out and bolts to the tomb to find Damaris, barely reaching it in time to kill the Ritterrack, but she's been bitten. She runs back up to her room where Nehemia is. She practically like passes out, and Nehemia heals Selena using word marks. And after she kind of comes to, after a few hours, Selena comes clean to Nehemia. Nehemia then names her Elentia, which means spirit that could not be broken. Fitting. And in the process, seems like there's almost like a magical binding to this name. It was kind of an interesting how that was worded. The king returns. Oh, snap. Okay. Yes, he returns, but alone. Everyone in his party was killed, apparently. Yeah, totally not sus at all. Kale and Selena are both very suspicious of this. During some practice with the champion, she's practicing with Nox. He's very observant about some things going on, which leads to Selena indirectly revealing like who she really is and that he should get out of the castle ASAP. And he does that night. He just sneaks out. Kaltane had some odd feelings and some quote unquote hallucinations when walking past Kane. Super interesting. And then Dorian and Selena French a little. The final test is canceled and they'll be rolling right into the final duel in 1 day. We get there. Kane beats Renault with ease. Kale offers Selena his sword. But then Nehemia also offers her a staff from Aelwai, kind of like a seemingly political move. So she takes the staff. Her and Kane do the toast before the fight. And with Kaltane's help, she drinks the wine with the poison in it. And as it starts to take effect, Kane starts to kind of gain the upper hand. He starts to go all demon on her and talk about her parents, which at this point, like nobody would know about. So how does he know this stuff? She also hears otherworldly voices calling her by a different name. She kind of discovers when this is going on that with the aid of the poison, she's actually slipping into the veil between worlds with like winged creatures and this weird like demon Kane. In their fighting, Kane rips off the amulet, the Eye of Elena. Kale tries to help her by encouraging her to like get up. Meanwhile, Nehemia is like frantically casting word marks as secretly as she can. Kane has Selena pretty messed up at this point, and like right when we think it's over, Elena shows up within the veil and just starts popping off. I mean, she just starts going crazy. She uses her magic to hold Kane and like those other winged creatures at bay while she goes over to Selena to remove the poison, as that's like the only way that she can help in this moment. Interestingly enough, Kane walks through Elena's wall of light like it like wasn't even there. So that's kind of interesting. She also casts a word mark in Kane's direction that almost seems to not cleanse Kane of the demon, but it definitely has an effect of whatever seems to be like possessing him, I guess. So the poison wears off, and as it leaves Selena's body, the veil shifts back to like reality. Selena also has a blue mark on her forehead and this like blinding blue light, which makes Nehemia gasp. And then with her last effort, Selena rushes for Kane, stabs him a few times with some devastating blows, knocking him face first into the ground. And she holds him there with like a piece of the staff against his neck, looking to the king, and the king declares her the victor. In the aftermath of this, apparently Kane and the king share a look. The king gives a little nod, and Kane goes to stab Selena in the back. Kale catches this and runs a sword through Kane's chest, killing him. Crazy. Qaltain tries to be discreet with Duke Parrington and is like, hey, bro, like, I thought you said this poison would work, like, WTF. But he's all like, poison? What poison? And totally throws her under the bus. And she is escorted post-haste to the dungeons without a second glance. In the next couple of days, Dorian talks to the king and suggests Kale not be punished for killing Kane. Also suggests that Parrington back off of like whatever plans he's got cooking up against Nehemia, and the king agrees. Nehemia visits Selena, tells her she saved her by opening a portal for Elena, and shares that her and her family know all about word marks and how to use them. Crazy. She was banishing the monsters that Kane was summoning within the castle, and Selena was washing away the protective word marks on the floor under her bed from Nehemia, lol. She gives Selena back the Eye of Elena amulet. Dorian visits with some guilt that he like didn't do anything to stop Kane. The king knows the mark on Selena's forehead is a word mark. He also sensed the dead during the duel. The king and Duke Parrington also talk about the influence of power on Kane and Qaltain. Kind of sounds like they also have plans for Qaltain. The king also tells the Duke to be ready because they'll soon have much to do in Aurelia. Kind of an uh-oh moment. Kale visits Selena. She thanks him. They share an embrace, which Dorian walks in on. Then Dorian gets friend-zoned. Kale stops to see her at dinner. She tells him that she shut it down with Big D. Selena has a dream where Elena tells her that she is meant for more and that blood ties cannot be broken. Selena goes to sign her contract. The king adds a quiet threat that if she doesn't behave, or if she steps out of line or doesn't return promptly for missions, that he'll kill Kale and Nehemia and Nehemia's family. And that's the end, folks, of book one, Throne of Glass.
Hooray!
Yep, we did it. We read the book.
And we'll see you next week for episode four.
Okay, we have so much to unpack from this chapter section. So we're actually just going to start taking it chapter by chapter and go through all of the kind of notes and highlights and initial reactions that we had. So we're going to start with chapter 36.
All right. I immediately had big issues with this chapter beginning with her being like a self-proclaimed assassin, which I say self-proclaimed because all off screen, I don't believe it. She's supposed to be smart. She pre-squeaked her hinges, hid a hidden door in her room from guests. She took drastic measures to keep herself safe in what is essentially a magic murder castle at this point. But she woke up to a bag with no return address, filled with unmarked candies. Like, it literally says she leaned over and crunched her face on it, and her immediate thought was to go ham on it and eat the whole thing, not totally worrying about anything. No, oh, it couldn't possibly be poisoned. What a stupid thing to do.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We talked about it a little bit here because that was like the first thing I said, and then Kyle just went on about it.
I was very upset.
Yeah, this is like fantasy books 101. Like, do not consume the mysterious food or drink until you've confirmed where it came from, because she didn't even bother to ask anyone. Just seemed so unconcerned by that. And I was like shouting at her the whole time I was reading that chapter.
It'd be like one thing if it was a normal staying in a nice hotel, you got the, you know, chocolate on your pillow thing every night, but she's been here for months and who knows how many people have died, how many things she's discovered, and everything else I feel like she's been at least a little bit careful about. But for some reason, I guess candy's just her weak spot, because she went for it. No questions asked. Didn't even worry about it later. There was never a, I shouldn't have done that.
But also, how dumb for Dorian to send her candy unmarked in the same castle in the same situation. When did he sneak in to put it? That he would go away and then think he could come back before she would eat it. I need a timeline of this whole entire evening.
Yeah, like Philippa came in first, right? And she asked her about it and she was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. It
kind of brings up the question too, like how many other times has he snuck in and out without her knowing? And like, just that was the one time he was like, I'll leave a little gift this time. A little bag of candy that I found.
Does no one else think it's weird that these two men just freely walk into her bedroom anytime they want and she's just in her nightgown or she's in her bed or she's asleep? And like, no one bats an eye. No one thinks that's weird. I think it's a little weird.
Just crawl up next to the pillow. Hey, how you doing?
We've been trying to contact you about your car's extended warranty.
Do you want a bag of candy?
It's kind of funny that he came in like expecting to get some candy too and was let down that she ate it all. Dude, she didn't even know who it was from. Like, granted, should she have eaten it all? No, for many reasons. But typical teen, like, oh, I got you a gift that I thought would also be a gift for me. Oh, well.
Actually, last year, John got me the whole Throne of Glass series, the like hardcover box set for my birthday. But he's the one that reads in print. I was reading it on my Kindle.
Well, now we're reading them. So thanks, John.
Yeah.
So really, it's a gift for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And now for all of our listeners, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
So yeah. Happy birthday, Connor. Thank you, John.
Happy birthday to everyone listening to this episode.
Okay, but for real, with this candy thing, the thing that I got more annoyed at, like Kyle was going off about the candy. I was more annoyed that she just didn't brush her teeth. Cause like for the next like chapter or even two chapters, she just kept like, I had to keep my mouth closed because my teeth were still red and everyone was commenting on it. And it was like a whole, like people were looking at her weird in church or whatever. And I'm like, just brush your teeth. Did we not have toothbrushes in fantasy world? And then a couple chapters later, you're just making out with someone and we're not brushing our teeth.
That's one of my like book pet peeves is when a character like wakes up and they've been unconscious for 6 days and then they just immediately start making out with somebody. I'm like, hello? Or they're in the forest for a week or something. Thing. And I'm like, your breath has to smell so disgusting right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
No, I totally agree.
Unrelated, but
I think about all of those things too. Authors, if you're listening, please have your people brush their teeth.
Please.
We appreciate it. All right. Chapter 37.
This was the temple service, I believe. The big thing there for me was I just wanted to know more about the pantheon. It said some goddess had birthed all these other gods, and I just wanted to know more about it. All these immaculately conceived god children, I wanted to know their duties and their, like, what are they the gods of? I think we heard, like, two or three, but I was like, just put an appendix in the back. Let me read that thing. We'll see what this is all about. But I didn't get that.
Yeah, that felt like such a tease because she started to go into all this lore and then it was like, and then she fell asleep.
Which I mean, kind of relatable.
Yeah.
From like Selena's perspective.
Okay, so chapter 38, my first note, this is the chapter where Selena like sneaks off and goes to the ball. She says at the beginning of the chapter, this would be her first ball where she wasn't there to kill someone. And I was like, aw. Like, she's like 18. This is the age that people are normally going to prom. And I'm just thinking about like most of the time in fantasy novels, the character like doesn't have parents. But I wish that everybody had like an Ember Quinlan, like Bryce's mom from Crescent City. Like, because I feel like Ember would totally be the kind of mom that would like make a scrapbook. And I'm just thinking like, oh, it's like baby's first non-murder ball. Anyway, that just made me laugh, that little line right there. And then when they get to the ball and she's like telling Gail that nobody's going to dance with her, he keeps scowling at everyone. And he's like, I'm not scowling at everyone. And then he immediately is like frowning at somebody walking by. I just love that.
I had thought this in the past about Gail, but this whole like section of the book to me was just like a big pity party for him. His line where he's like, oh, I think you have far more attractive suitors vying for your attention. I'm boring company to keep. Who knows if he might have some issues or like past with being rejected that plays into this, but just such a pity party. And before it was a little bit hidden, but now he's just outright playing into this like, oh, poor me sort of thing. And I love him, but gotta get over that hump there.
Well, and I could imagine it's probably happened with Dorian specifically, since Dorian is such a ladies' man. And he had said something like, you know, I'm just the captain of the guard. Like, I felt bad about Kale's little pity party. It did feel like that, but it just made me have sympathy for him. I didn't like hate him for it. I really grew to like Kale a lot more during this end of chapter. So, hi, John. Welcome to the podcast.
I highlighted this in the book, but I don't remember why. Maybe I just thought it was a good line. But seeing her made him feel like a man.
A good woman always will.
A good woman always will. That's right, Lauren. That's right. That's good.
Amen. Yeah. It was just so relatable to you, I guess.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, man, that's right. Good for you.
Also, I did not pick up on this on our first read through the book, but back at the beginning of the chapter, when Selena's getting dressed in her room, she asks Philippa, like, where in Aurelia did you get this gown? And Philippa's like, don't ask questions. Like, she just like brushes it off. But then when Selena sees Dorian at the ball, it says Dorian was alarmingly handsome in his pewter tunic. One might say it matched her dress. And then he says, well, do I need to lecture you about how stupid it was to sneak into the ball, or can I just ask you to dance with me instead? And then also, Caltaine's dress was a gift from Parrington, who was her date. So I'm like, did Dorian just like assume Selena was going to sneak in? And he picked out an incredible gown for her ahead of time and sent it to Philippa and like had her put it on and not say anything. Like, it just cracked me up because Philippa's putting on this big show, like pretending that the prince is going to be upset if she's late.
Maybe Philippa is like the wing woman here. And so she was the coordinator of outfits and Dorian didn't even know or something. Like, and she was,
oh, maybe,
you know, doing the behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, I just thought it was cute that, like, I didn't pick up on that the first time, but I was like, okay, so yeah, either Dorian gifted her this dress or yeah, maybe Philippa was the one coordinating it, but it was cute.
Cause if that's true, then Philippa's pretty tricky. Cause Selena was even the one who like convinced her to say out loud, like, you're going to be late, you better go, so that the guards wouldn't ask her questions. So we should have been watching Philippa all along. Yep. She's the real mastermind.
What I think would be really hilarious is if Dorian did coordinate the whole thing and he told the guards outside of her room ahead of time to like, just let her go. Philippa's putting on this big show. Anyway, chapter 39.
I think this one was interesting because it started confirming a lot of my suspicions about Caltaine and her relationship to the Duke. And she's just used like a pawn in his plan, both like mentally and physically being abused because she doesn't know what she's doing, really. She's getting all these headaches. She's not probably in the know really about the larger plan. On the other hand, Kale is being abused mentally only and only by himself. He's torturing himself even further in this chapter, just like standing outside the balcony. I picture him like kicking dirt clods like a little kid left out of the playground at recess. He's just like, he noticed that she never looked down.
You're seeing this such from a male perspective, because I, on the other hand, thought this was so adorably sad and cute. But it's like the literal quote is like, still he watched until she laughed and went inside. She never bothered to look down. And my heart's like breaking, like, oh, poor Kale.
Oh, like that's
I just thought it was so sweet. I don't know. I just really like him. But also, I had written that Dorian did the like lean on the doorframe thing.
Oh, you know?
Like, and she totally was for it. She fell for it.
As she should.
I would feel more for Kale if he tried, but he's not actively trying to like have any further relationship with her. In these chapters, at least, he is just throwing like a pity party and he's like, he's given up mentally on this relationship and he's checked out
of it. He's being a good friend.
You know, that's fine. If you are being a good friend, then you can't throw your pity party in front of the person you're trying to be a good friend to. It's borderline manipulative.
I disagree with you on so many points, and we can argue about this later. We will be having a discussion.
Tune in for a bonus episode where Lauren yells at me.
Also, nobody is perfect. And so if he had one moment where he cracked and said, like, it could never be me or whatever it was, like, I'm not faulting him on that. I don't know.
You throw one pity party and all of a sudden.
I don't know. John, where do you weigh in on this?
I don't really know, honestly.
Are you Team Dorian? I don't know if you guys can say if you're Team Dorian or Team Kale because you've read the books. Don't ruin it for me. So don't answer that.
Well, I would say on the reread, I'm probably more Team Dorian. Just because of their banter. Like, I didn't remember him being so, I mentioned, I don't remember him being so like funny and witty and stuff. And yeah, I mean, like looking back, obviously he's just got a woe is me attitude toward her, especially coming into the end of the book. So
I think later on in the book, it's mentioned that like, since you've already said like they had that ending where she kind of friend zoned Dorian. Wasn't there a point where he actually said like, oh, you finally figured out why it wouldn't work?
Yeah, because he had warned her, right? He's like, just be careful, mm-hmm. or whatever. And then yeah, he basically said, so you finally came to your senses.
Yeah,
because I think he knew what she realized, and that if and when she became the king's champion, it was like, I mean, what are they gonna do, like sneak around the entire castle like her and Dorian? Or
so maybe I was thinking about it wrong, where he wasn't throwing a pity party for himself. Maybe he was sad seeing her get more into it. knowing that it wouldn't end well. And that's why he was a little off put by it. Maybe I just need to reframe it. Still, though, don't say that stuff at a party, man. Bring the vibe down.
Oh, gosh. All right, let's move on to chapter 40. We still have 15 chapters to go through, so...
The only note that I had was that my theory of Caltaine and the Duke was confirmed with no room for interpretation. She's 100% under his control. Yep. Maybe not like mind controlled, but she's been gaslit into being this gopher for him, thinking that it's going to get her everything she wants.
Well, yeah. And then in the previous chunk of chapters, Kale had seen Duke Parrington like his eyes go black or something. And then in the same reference with Caltaine, the black ring on his finger pulsed and her head gave a throb and pain in response. And so it's like anytime this black ring has been brought up, the black is around, or like their eyes go black or something gets dark. Like this is the first time we hear the mention of it and it comes back a couple times. The other thing I was really mad about in this chapter, excuse everyone, I'm upset. Okay, so they were trying to name the dog. And so he said, what about, he said, tapping his chin, Goldie, like Goldie or whatever. And she said, that's the stupidest name I've ever heard. Excuse me, my dog's name is Goldie. And she's the cutest dog ever. She still poops in our house all the time, but she's the cutest dog ever. And we love, at least I love her. Kyle's over it. And then she freaking names the dog Fleetfoot. What? And like, John, even in your little recap, you were like, so cute. And I was like, no, not. Goldie is so much cuter than Fleetfoot. I will die on this hill. Team Goldie. That's all I have to say.
In chapter 41, I think this was the first line of the chapter. I just said this was super relatable. The clock chimed 10 and Selena looked up from her book. She should be sleeping, or at least trying to. Me too, girl. And then this is just like a quick thing. It says Selena was like wondering how the word marks could work when like magic is gone, like they somehow operate outside of magic. And then she learns that Cain is granted the victim's strength every time he like sacrifices somebody like to the Ritterak or whatever. They're talking about how like magic was just like gone one day. And so I'm wondering if any of the victims had some kind of magic before magic disappeared. Is Cain also like inheriting that somehow? Because I don't know, like just the way that he was described when Caltaine was like hallucinating and thought she saw shadows rippling from him or whatever. Is that related to him getting strength and stuff? Or is that just part of like the way that he's using the word marks for evil? I don't know. That was just a thought that I had.
We were talking a little bit about the word marks before we started, how I was like, they are magic. They're magic. You say magic is gone and they're saying like, oh, the word marks can do all these magical things, but they're not magic. But to me, like they are. But then, yeah, I don't know. With magic being gone, like I feel like it's still a different magic system maybe, but it's still magic. And then just now when you said like he gains his victim strength, it reminded me that during the final fight we had, I think, was it 4 deaths in the castle that were caused by this? I kind of expected him to be a lot stronger. Me as a normal guy, not the strongest, if I had the strength of 4 other super strong people, I could easily punch someone's lights out like one try. But during the fight, like she's getting badly bruised and yeah, she breaks a rib. I feel like his hits should have done so much more when it felt like it was like, all right, yeah, he's strong, but not much stronger than anyone else who has a giant weapon and is hitting you with it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I think when Nehemia is talking about her family knowing the word marks and how to use them, I think she mentions that it's like, it's not exactly magic. It's something different. It's something separate from magic. We don't get much more than that, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's odd to me. I'm sure maybe I'll learn more about it later. But right now I'm like, it looks like magic, feels like magic. You know, it's magic, but maybe it'll separate later for me.
It is interesting that we don't see what maybe his full strength is, but I think that proves the point of how much he was like toying with her. Because before it said when he trapped her in the tomb or whatever with the Ritterak, one moment he was in front of her with the monster and then the next moment he was behind her and he had disarmed her and she couldn't even do anything. I feel like he was probably able to pick and choose kind of when he used that power.
I thought he was like holding back on some of those things because there was an audience of people.
Yeah, that's just my thought too. It's like, how much could he show without just like people being like, hold on a second, there's no way that this is possible without something else going on. Yeah.
Chapter 42.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of that fight with the Ritterak, I was also right about her using the sword, which I was happy about. So just claiming another theory that I got right, I'm going to keep claiming them as we go. That was one of them.
I was annoyed she didn't like take the sword with her, because this whole time she's been like, I have the pins of, you know, like the sewing pins. That's going to keep me safe or something.
Or like, where is she going to keep it?
Under her mattress? I don't know.
Well, she had mentioned she didn't want to bring it back with her because she thought they would take it. Hmm. Like, she thought the guards or somebody would take it away.
She knew how important it was to.
See, that makes sense. But also, like, Kane could take it. At least then she would know it's in her room or something.
Or at least just move it right inside the passageway door, like the tunnel or something.
Yeah, check on it every once in a while. Put it behind the tapestry. Yeah. Apparently no one ever looks behind the tapestry. The next few are you, Kyle. Why don't you just...
You just fire them off.
I was also right about Nehemia being good and people suspecting the king. Got them both.
Yep.
I was annoyed that, like, when Selena got back and her arm was healed or whatever, she just was like, oh, like, my arm's just magically healed. But instead of talking about that, instead of worrying about what is happening, I'll just tell you all of my story. Get the information. Like, why are you not asking questions? Like, something insane just happened to you. And so instead, you're going to talk about a year ago when you were in jail. Like, just the information I got in that conversation was not the information that I felt like needed to happen for the hype of what was just going on. It was like action and intense and whatever, whatever. And then it was just like immediate cut off, talk about something else.
I like kind of touched on it a little bit later, what you're talking about, how both of them sort of do it to each other, where they're like, I am not fully trusting this person, so I'm going to withhold some secrets. And it's because they're withholding secrets that they can't fully trust one another. And it just kind of goes in a circle like that, until they finally reveal it later. And then they're both like, oh, well, why didn't you tell me? It's like, well, neither of you were willing to be the person that trusted. And if you're not willing to trust, then the other person can't trust you. And if you, you know, think you're in a trusting relationship, but you're withholding information, then you played yourself. You're not in a trusting relationship. You're the issue.
Preach, Kyle.
I think too, Lauren, I think that's partially why that conversation went the way it did. Because Nehemia kind of asked her, like, hey, where'd you get that? And she's like, she didn't want to tell her. So it's like, how could she justify asking her a bunch of questions about the magic if she wasn't going to talk to her about what she was doing or about the tunnels or about Elena's tomb and stuff?
She could have asked questions about Nehemia, though, and got more information instead of sharing what she already, like, she wasn't going to share her side, but she could have at least asked, like, who healed my arm? Did you remember what happened while I was, you know, out for the last however many hours? Like, just, I don't know, anything.
Well, she knew Nehemia healed her arm.
Okay, then how? I don't know. Like, I was just, I get your point of view, or like, I get what you're saying, but. Eh.
I feel like that happened a few times in the book too, where there's like a peak of action and then the next scene is like, anyway. You know, it's like a total non sequitur. I'm like, okay, well, it wasn't an ease down. And like, there's not really a immediate consequence to what just happened, I guess. But on to 45, I suppose. At the beginning of this chapter, I'm pretty sure like one of the first lines is like, Caltaine is wondering, oh, I need more opium. I need to smoke and get my mind clear or whatever. And I started to wonder if the opium was relief from or cause for the headaches and the visions that she was getting. That was like the first moment where I kind of was wondering what part do the drugs play? Where are they coming from? What are they doing?
I did actually Google it, like if headaches were like a side effect of opium.
I did too.
And they are.
They are, yeah. As are hallucinations and other things, which I was talking about with Lauren like later on, because I was looked up to see if Bloodbane was a real thing. It's not, but it's like closest influences would have been some of the blank bane plants that we have, which are sources for opium. There you go, a little connection there. Drugs are how you see the devil. Okay, so church was right all along. If you take opium, you'll see the devil, just like Selena did in her fight.
Wow. I noticed like with the rings that it, every time they mention the rings, like after the first one, I was like, okay, something about this is important. And so even here, she was looking at his black ring. She was studying his black ring on his finger. Did it somehow have a connection to his horrible abilities? So like maybe she had some sort of subconscious feeling or thought that this thing had some control over her, even if obviously she never figured it out, or at least as far as we know. I'm on ring watch.
We're on claw watch. We're on ring watch.
I mean, and you pointed out too earlier that she saw like the effects emanating from the ring specifically after she had opium and then Selena with the blood bane. But you pointed out that, like, well, Kale also saw his eyes turn black. So there's obviously a visual component to this that people could see without being high or poisoned. But I would love to know the connection between being in a poor mindset, either, you know, opiates or poisons, that connects you to the ability to see further into this realm of death.
Yeah.
If that's ever explored in any other book, but.
Well, and it wasn't just the realm of death, because, like, Elena doesn't come from the realm of death. She came from some sort of light. What did they call it? Like, the
other worlds.
The other worlds. I kept calling it the upside down, like from Stranger Things.
they kept saying the in-between.
The in-between, yeah, that's what it was. Too. So, yeah, so they're in the upside down. And so they're just able to see all the things. They're basically just will buyers, but... I also really liked that Nox was able to get away, as far as we know, I guess, because, like, there was another person who tried to get away and they were killed immediately. So as far as we know, Nox made it out, hopefully safe. And yeah. I just appreciated, like, I don't know, it made me happy. Like, oh, maybe he gets a happy ending somewhere. Or maybe he comes back later in books. And because he was just, like, a really good side character. He had great side character energy. Yeah. He was there for her. He was supportive. And didn't really cause any drama. He was a ladies' man, just kind of doing his own thing. So I don't know. I just hope, this is my hopes for Nox. Well wishes to him and his adventures.
Cheers.
May we see him again someday, or at least hear his story. For chapter 46, I didn't have much going on except for just an absence of Kale. The chapter was just full of exposition for pretty much everyone. I felt like just a distinct absence of him. And for some reason, I left the chapter being like, oh, where's my favorite mopey little guard? I miss him.
That's his strategy. He complains all the time. And then when he's not there, she finds herself thinking, like, I wonder what Kale's doing. And then there you go.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Just strategy the entire time.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to make you miss me. Aside from that, he does come back in the next chapter to be rejected yet again. So probably why he wasn't in the previous one. Whenever his weapon is rejected and she takes Nehemia's over his, I'm sure a small part of him died inside. But regardless of whether it is him moping because himself feeling like he's not being chosen, or he's moping on behalf of her because her relationship with Dorian is doomed for failure, he is there and supportive. He's not ever been like, you aren't hanging out with me or talking to me or doing the things I want, so I'm avoiding you. He's there and he's trying to give her his sword. He's trying to get her up in the fight. He's still 100% on her side, which I appreciate.
I had a note about that a little bit further down. Like, Kale is the one who's like, he keeps showing up for her, like, when it matters the most. And I thought it was so sweet that he, like, offered her his sword and trying to reach for her hand and just, like, offer support and, like, tell her to get up and, like, all of those things that made me so emotional.
Well, and I took him not giving the sword because he just, like, immediately steps back. Like, he doesn't even.
Yeah.
He doesn't even get a no. He's just like, oh, no, that's the thing to do. Like, I'm supporting you, making this political stance. I'm behind you.
Yeah.
And that's how I took that. Not as like, she didn't pick me. Like,
rejection.
Yeah, I didn't take it that way. I took it as like a supportive, you know, or even just you and your friendship. Like, another show of him just stepping back and letting her be the queen, go off queen. Also, it was funny because Kyle and I, when I read that he said like some mopey guard, I was like, how dare you talk about Kale this way? Like, I love him so much. And I think it's because I see a lot of the things that he does in how Kyle acts sometimes with me and stuff. And one of these moments was right here when he took her hand and he like rubs her ring that he gave her. Like, Kyle does that to me all the time. Anytime he's holding my left hand and he will like rub my wedding ring. It's just like really cute. And then he did that all
so sweet.
Leading up till we got engaged. He would start like rubbing that spot and I'd be like, stop, you're playing with me. You're joking. And so then I don't know if that's where it like came from, but that moment to me was really sweet because that's something that Kyle does with me. And so I was like, oh, he loves her. He's supporting her. Like, that was just a cute personal connection.
I don't think I even caught that little detail.
Yeah.
That's it was so cute. Sweet.
The first thing I did write in this chapter was, so it is a duel. It is, because we had this whole argument, not argument, but just conversation last time on what is a duel or a double duel, or we even Googled it, I think, but it really is
a quarrel.
Yes, a quarrel. But it really is like, I mean, still, I guess technically a double duel because they're dueling and they're dueling. It's a tournament of duels.
There's three duels. Yeah, a tournament of duels.
Yes.
A turn-a-duel. A duel-nament.
Yes.
I like turn-a-duel.
Turn-a-duel.
That's it. That's what it is. But yes, so that was the first thing I wrote. I was like, ha-ha! We have the answer. Back to chapter 47. Having read Sarah J. Maas books before, or maybe it's just a fantasy thing and I just haven't read like a ton of fantasy books, but it is like a huge discussion over mating bonds. And I have no idea if that's a thing in this book. So this is just my own mind and speculation. But when she was having this whole moment with Kale before the actual duel or whatever, they were like looking at each other. They're having this whole moment. He's rubbing her ring, like the whole romance. And she said, far inside of her, she found a golden chain that bound them together. And so like, to me, that was like, okay, is that the mating bond? You know, like in the Crave series, which I've mentioned before, but like there's literally a string, like they can see it inside themselves that is connecting them to all their friendships, but specifically their mating bond is like brighter and it's like lined with gold. And so that's, I think, maybe also where my mind went with this, like maybe.
Yeah. And they say nothing else about it. It's that one line and then they just move on. There's like no other context for that.
And like for me, that was like the bottom of my page. And so I was like, hold on a second. Go back. Chill the beats.
Chill the beats.
Go back. Reread.
That's right. Couldn't have said it better myself.
So yeah, I don't know if that's a thing. But maybe also that's why I really like them. I don't know.
Yeah, they say something, I think in a further chapter too, where it's, I don't know if it's a throwback to that line where it says like, yeah, she had this realization she couldn't quite name or something.
Or like, yeah, some feeling deep down inside of her that she, like an inner feeling or thought.
Yeah.
Which again made me think maybe mating bond.
Yeah. So we really have no context for it. But I had that highlighted too, because I thought that was super interesting. I don't remember reading that the first time.
Well, in fact, they haven't even mentioned anyone being in love. Like Dorian says, he's in love with her, whatever, but no other adult that we have seen loves anyone. like no one's in a happy relationship. Like granted, we don't know a ton of people, but like we don't even know if Philip has married happily, or it's just such an off the wall thought, I guess. Maybe just because, like I said, I've read the other SJM books and that's a big talking point in those books. I just thought it was worth pointing out.
Yeah. Also, I got kind of excited at this line from the same chapter where it says, freedom or death lay at this table. Her past and future were seated on a glass throne. And I was like, they said the name of the book.
Always got to point that part out.
I was getting the names of like the titles of all these books confused like so badly the first time that we read through the series and like before I had really started it, because I couldn't remember, even after reading them, I like couldn't remember why each book had the title that it had. Like obviously it's like a glass castle, so that's, you know, kind of similar to the first book, but it's like I like the name of all of the other books, I was like I couldn't keep them straight because I couldn't remember why they called them that. So anyway, I just got excited
also with this one because I also had the like, oh, it's the name of the book, but then it's also the name of the series, so maybe that sentence even means more. I know like in her future was seated on a glass throne, like maybe she ends up being the actual queen and she really does go off and like, you know, who knows. I don't know. Like somebody knows, you're all listening and you've read the book, but that was just like, it wouldn't be the title of the entire 8-book series if it didn't mean something big and epic like that. But,
how old was she when she wrote this book? Cause this was her first book she published, right? Am I correct in that?
Yes. Well, I don't know when Catwoman came out, but
she did write a book about Catwoman.
Was she fairly young though when she wrote this one?
She was like 16 when she started writing this book, but then in the acknowledgments at the end it says it was like 10 years in the making.
Right. You were sort of mentioning like, oh, the Glass Throne, they mentioned the book name, and like later books maybe they didn't do that. Sometimes when I think about things like that, I have to wonder, was there even a plan to go this far? Like, she had no way of knowing if it would have been successful. Did she just write this book thinking like, you know, who knows if there will be a book after this? And then some of the things she wrote later fit into what this book had, because I feel like this book does have a lot of open endings. And I don't know whether that's because she planned from the start, from the very beginning, to write further books to explain it, or because it was just one of her first books and she didn't necessarily know how to tie up every knot nice and pretty or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know how many it was originally contracted for. I don't think it was 8 though. Like I think she had written like Throne of Glass. There was a different title for like the draft of the book. And then The Assassin's Blade was written as like 5 novellas that they put into one book. But I don't think, even if she had a plan for like, the whole arc of the series. I don't think it was originally going to be like, oh, this will be 8 books. Because even ACOTAR was only supposed to be 3 originally. And then Crescent City was only supposed to be 3 originally. And now ACOTAR is going to be like 8 books. And Crescent City will have at least one more.
I want to believe that Sarah J. Maas, from the moment she sat down to write a book, is just a genius. And everything was planned out from... Because like so many things in all of her books, there were things I would read at the end of ACOTAR that was said in like the very beginning. And I was like, how did she connect these things? You know, that kind of thing. So it makes me want to believe that from the beginning. But I do see Kyle's point of view and like that it was her first book. You know, maybe she went back and would be like, oh, I referenced this in the first book. Let's make it mean this now later, you know, kind of a thing. So
that's what I'm very skeptical of. Because it is very easy to have something already written and then later on in a book think, oh, how am I going to do this? And then like, oh, I wrote this earlier. I'll just involve that. So I'm skeptical of that because I've seen not necessarily books, but like other series do that sort of thing where it sort of retroactively fits in because they got to plan later. But like you said, it's my first book. I don't know her well, but I, even at that age, publishing a book, no way of knowing if it's even going to be successful enough to continue it. I too hope that an author would sort of plan out at least a very basic skeleton of the world that they want to create.
There was something, I'm not going to give anything away, but there was something in this first book that, I mean, it was like so subtle, but I was like, oh, I didn't realize she started like foreshadowing for that this early in the series. And John was like, I didn't really take that as foreshadowing. It just seemed like some kind of offhand thing that like ended up, you know, being made into something. Like we just had that conversation about how we weren't sure if it was like something she had planned from the beginning or something she just decided to tie in later. So we'll have to talk about it, I guess, when we get there.
I already sort of touched on my note for 48 where her taking the poison and all of a sudden hallucinating, quote unquote, hallucinating all these demons and shadows sort of coincided with Caltaine and the opium and seeing that even though Nehemia can see it for completely different reasons. I still wonder if that's just going to be explored further. People that are under any sort of influence being able to see into different realms.
Yeah, we discussed if Caltaine could see it at that moment, like if she was on her opioids or whatever, if that has allowed her to see whatever was happening in that moment. If it is like what Kyle's research and they do kind of come from ish the same root, is that what we've said it is, Kyle?
Yeah, that's what plants come from, is roots, and then they grow up into plants.
I am just curious though, who actually saw all the things, because like obviously Selena did and Kane, and we're led to believe like Nehemia because she was like doing all the magic stuff, which we joked it was like Doctor Strange. I think the king sees some, which makes me think Duke Parrington does, because they have their friendship rings, which we've also been calling them that, their little black rings,
their friendship rings.
So we talked a little bit about this beforehand, but it seems like it was only Selena and Nehemia, because it said the king felt the dead. And I think also she was only able to like see the veil due to the Bloodbane because of its properties. And then Nehemia, obviously, because she had like, she knows how to do the word marks and all that kind of stuff. Because I had asked Connor about that. But I thought it was interesting at first that they couldn't, like, why couldn't they see them? Mm-hmm. But then it was like, oh, well, I mean, the circumstances for Selena, obviously, with the poison and Nehemia. But he could still, like, feel, I think it said he could, I could sense the dead, or I felt the dead or something.
On the subject of the poison, I would like to point out that it is, again, a dumb decision to drink any wine or alcohol before a fight. Like, no matter how little you drink, like, why? Why do it at all? Shouldn't you try to just...
And they weren't giving her any time to rest. So like, yeah,
and no time to rest, no hydration.
Bottoms up too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed kind of like a weird thing to do.
Well, if I don't have 5 minutes to catch my breath, I guess I'll get sloshed.
Yeah, and she literally thinks right before she takes the wine glass, she's like, who wrote that script? Like she was thinking how weird it was that Caltaine was like saying all this stuff. Like she's giving this big speech and then she's like, and here's some mysterious wine glasses. And Selena's like, oh, well, like
I also was underwhelmed that she didn't react to Caltaine being there, like in the first place. Like she's like, oh, and then there's Caltaine standing behind them. But like she didn't know that she knew she was Selena or whatever. Like she only knew her as Lillian. Like we saw the conversation where Duke Parrington told her that's Selena Sardothian or whatever. Selena doesn't know that Kel'Tane knows that, at least that we know. So first of all, the girl's just there. We're not going to react to that at all. And then you know that she doesn't like you. And you're just going to like...
And she's giving this like weird speech right before she hands you this.
But like...
like she was not being discreet at all.
We, Connor and I have read another book that will not be named right now because we're not spoiling other books. But in this other book, they literally get poisoned by a drink like 4 or 5 times. And it's like, people, stop drinking the drinks that are offered to you. Like, why are we this dumb? And so same with the candy. And then here we are with the wine. Like,
yeah, that made me so mad. My last note from this chapter was at the, well, again, at the very end of the chapter with Grave, where she's like, she like just drops her handkerchief and she's like, you can keep that. Like, it's like a, not a mic drop. I guess it's like a handkerchief drop.
Then Kale says, like, did it have to be so dramatic? Like, was the handkerchief necessary or whatever he said?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was funny.
I love it. Go off, queen. All right.
She had a handkerchief the whole time and she didn't wipe her teeth with it. Why did this not come into play earlier in the story? Someone who carries around a handkerchief cares for appearance. I mean, I'm just saying.
Great point.
That is an amazing point. Good job.
Only thing I'd written for 49 was Elena coming in and being a good trip sitter for Selena as she falls into the slippery slope of drug usage. Pulled her out just in time. She came in and said, hey, calm down. Calm down. You're seeing a lot of stuff right now. You need to focus. But it was a cool scene for her to kind of be, I guess we learned later, summoned in by Nehemia. But yeah, it was a neat scene. I liked that, her coming in like that.
I don't think Nehemia necessarily summoned her. I think she said that somehow Selena put out a call and that Elena had already, Elena had already accepted that call. Oh, she just opened the gate, basically, or whatever, the door for Elena to come in, which I think shows some of Selena's some sort of power. She was able to somehow reach the other side, even if she didn't know she was doing that.
Yeah, because she said she didn't come all the way in, right? She was like... not quite in the world that they were in. She's like,
yeah, she's in the upside down.
Yeah,
for real. She really is in the upside down. That's really what it is. I also really liked seeing Elena, like the warrior side of her and like this like total boss woman. And I like later whenever she finds out, you know, like, you know, history books just paint me as some, you know, damsel in distress type thing. But she was just right there next to the guy doing all the things. And I don't know, woman power, the whole moment. I like that part.
She is the moment.
Yeah, she is.
Go off queen.
Go off queen, literally.
Someone asked today, when are we getting go off queen shirts? And only one episode is out right now.
They are coming. I'm working on it. It's on my list. Which Lauren then called my TBR. She said my list of merch ideas is basically my TBR.
You take one thing off of it, but you've already added 10 in the meantime. So it never ends.
That's exactly how it is.
Okay. So they're fighting. They're doing all these fights and they're doing it on the veranda. And the only only time that that word has been familiar to me is the Bluey episode, Veranda Santa. And so, I'm like weirdly picturing like their like balcony, I guess, of their house in the Bluey house.
And like Bandit.
Like. Yeah. Just like chilling in bed and they sneaking in the whole bit. So shout out to Bluey. If you don't have toddlers and you don't know what that is, go watch it. You won't regret it.
The only other thing that I thought was kind of funny, like it almost like took me out of the moment, but not in like, I don't know, not like a bad way, but just when Elena is like there and she's showing up and it's this huge moment. There's all these crazy things going on. And Elena's like, I cannot protect you, but I can remove this poison from your body. I was like, well, that's convenient.
That is. Yeah, I agree. I also thought that Nehemia could like, cause she was like, I saved you. And like immediately I was like, oh, she was healing her the whole entire time or doing some sort of like that kind of thing. And then she's like, because I opened the door. And I was like, oh, okay. But like, I just thought she's going to be, you know, over there, like trying to like stop her from bleeding out or something. Cause that would have been very helpful, but she got,
that would help.
She got help, but not in the ways we thought it was, I guess, from both sides.
All right. Last 5 chapters. We can do this.
Yes. Chapter 50. Kale kills Cain, runs him through with his sword. Finally takes care of the threat. But he goes catatonic because it's the first time he's seen someone die and he's the cause of it. He said that he's seen death before. Obviously, he's investigated murders recently. It's crazy to me, though, that a captain of the guard hasn't seen someone die. I was talking with Lauren about it earlier. Like, I feel like that's a prerequisite. If you've not been in any sort of battle where someone dies, you're not captain. You don't know how to handle that situation. He also is like touted at the beginning of the book for like being a pretty smart dude. And it's been months of people dying and he's got nothing. And he's the captain of the guard. You'd think that he'd be good at like getting something from the investigation. I mean, like to the point, like he had to call Slane in because he says that, you know, she's more familiar with death and crimes and, you know, looking at bodies and seeing how it happened. But I don't know. It's another point where like, I really want to like him, but something is just stopping me from being full team Kale.
Well, and then at the end, like the book ends and they're just like, oh, yep, she's the new champion, happily ever after kind of vibes. And it, no one's like unsolved murders. Like, right. No one's freaking out. No one's worried that they just like dropped the case. Like,
that is a great point. I mean, we do find out like who was, you know, responsible for it, but
yeah. If they really cared in the first place, they probably would have stopped what they were doing. Like after the first, maybe not the first murder, you know, everybody gets
that's
one.
True.
But after two people die, maybe put a hold on the competition.
Everybody gets one?
Yeah, everybody gets one. There's one murder in a castle.
Your free space for bingo.
You know, a murder in a castle is nothing to write home about. But once there's two, maybe start replanning your calendar year. Like put the competition off. Find out what's happening. But understandable, like, obviously the king was in on it. So that's the only reason it probably didn't stop. But still.
And Con, you said, like, we did figure it out, which you're right. The reader figured it out. And Selena figured right. it out. But I don't know that anyone else did. I mean, I assume probably Duke Parrington knows and maybe the king. And that's why the king isn't, like, trying to make it a thing. Because he even, like, tries to stop Duke Parrington later for, like, being too obvious with their plans or whatever. But I feel like if Kale's really good at his job, then he would be doing his job. But
or maybe they pinned more of it on Caltaine than they said, because she was, you know, caught talking about poison at the end of the match. And I'm pretty sure it said that she was in the dungeon right at the end, that they were still going to use her. So maybe they pinned more on her and they were just like, yeah, the murders were caused by her. And they put her in the dungeon, and to everyone in the kingdom, that's problem solved. Once somebody's in the dungeon, they're either going to die or be held there forever.
No, because they acted like they were going to bring her back out for something. Like, let her rot for a few days. So I don't think it would be like, she's a murderer of a bajillion people. She's staying down there forever. Send her to the salt mines. Because that's what they did to Selena. Instead, they're like, we'll bring her out in a couple of days. She'll be fine.
Well, the king and the duke talked about using her, but I don't know if they're letting like the whole kingdom in on that, you know? Maybe it's just between them that she's still a pawn.
Or if they're
in
like
game.
Blaming it on Kane and Kane's already dead.
Yeah, maybe bit on
Kane would make sense. But this whole like scene with Kane trying to kill Selena or whatever, I was very confused by that. I had to reread it a couple times, and because it was like talking about Caltaine and her like arguing about the poison with Duke Parrington, and then Kane had eye contact with the king, and then the next thing was just like, so he turned and right before he could stab her, like said something about the word she. And then all of a sudden Kale like interrupted it, like by stabbing him. And it wasn't until the next chapter that you're like, because he tried to kill Selena. And I was like, oh, okay. I had no idea. Like, was he trying to kill Caltaine? And like, cause she was going to like reveal some big secret or something. Was like where my mind was at. I was thinking that he was trying to kill Caltaine. And then I was like, why does Kale care that Caltaine is being killed? Like, no offense, like obviously like protect a lady, I guess, but like finally do your job. But but I was confused by that, and I read it a couple times, and maybe that was just me, maybe I can't read a book or something.
No, I did that too, actually. Yeah, even like I mean, this is my reread, but I was listening to the audiobook, and I had the Kindle app open. So I had like the ebook open as well, but I was listening to the audiobook, and I was like, wait. Like, I was like, what just happened? And I had to go back and I like listened to it again, but I had to like look at the ebook again as I was like just to make sure that I got it all, because it happened so fast. But like, I also feel like that would have been kind of true to the moment, I guess. Like, it all did happen really fast and he was just reacting, but
it would just be like an author or editor choice to write Selena instead of she or her or whatever the term was that was confusing, since it was two females that were having this moment, I guess, especially because it was like about Caltaine and Selena was just kind of over here starting to walk off with Dorian or whatever, but I don't know. But also how dirty of the king to try to like stab her in the back, literally. Because that was on him. Like Kane was just, I don't know that Kane really decided to do anything. Maybe he was just as much in control as Kel'Thane was. But I don't know. That's evil.
Yeah, it was like, oh no, like you lost the duel. Might as well just stab her now before we all clear out the room or whatever.
While everyone's watching.
While Santa's still on the veranda.
Yeah, was this just a way for the king to find his champion for whatever nefarious purposes he needed and also get rid of some of the worst criminals he knew? Or because like that would be the only reason why I could see him saying like, yeah, you lost, but go ahead and kill her. And like, would everyone at the table just be like, we're okay with that?
I mean, they were okay with bringing all these evil people here to basically die and kept the secret that the whole entire thing was happening from everyone because it was like pretty much a secret the whole time.
I guess.
And the whole point of being the king's champion is that you kill people. So I don't think they'd really fault it for that.
Yeah, I guess. It just seems, and I do talk about it later, but there is a complaint I have with the book is that every evil character is just an evil character. There's not like really a big reason behind it. It's just like, this guy's a jerk. This guy's a jerk. This guy's ugly. So he must be a jerk. That sort of thing. Cause she says like, oh, of course I get the grotesque one. Kill him in 5 seconds. Gone. But everyone who has anything like slightly off putting about them is a bad guy. And there's not really any gray area for any character in the book. It's like they are either good or bad. And you may not know, like with Nehemia, how it's like, oh, it's called into question. But for like, what, 3 chapters?
I also wrote that at some point that it felt like there wasn't anything major that happened. Like there might be like, oh, and then the next chapter it's resolved. Or there might be like, oh no, I'm skeptical, but we're not going to think about it. And then it's resolved. Like with the Nehemia stuff, like she just was like, I avoided her for weeks. And it's like, why aren't we trying to figure this out? You know, I did struggle with that, like with the whole book. It was just mid, I guess.
Kale's plan all along. I just am excited for you guys to read the rest of the series because it is funny that like I always hype up like I feel like the character development in this series is like unmatched. Like I've never read another series or book where like you go through so many different like phases with characters and stuff, but it really doesn't happen in the first book. So I feel like it makes sense for where we're at right now, but I'm excited to get into the rest of it for that reason. But anyway, we'll keep rolling. I did have a note that I'm like, I'm glad Dorian was at least like beating himself up a little bit for not doing anything. Like, even though he really couldn't have done much to help, like he wasn't allowed to interfere. He didn't want to get her disqualified or whatever. But I was like, okay, at least he's acknowledging it and like feels bad. Unlike a certain horse monster under a certain mountain in another book. I'm just going to leave that there.
Kyle read that earlier and he goes, am I supposed to know what that means? And I said, no.
Nope. You are not.
We'll get there.
Also, Dorian loves Selena and they just like glaze right over that too because it's just like a realization he has and then he gets friend zoned. So yikes.
I was annoyed with Dorian, not because he didn't help. Like I understand the thought process of, you know, like he didn't want to ruin it for her, blah, 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 blah. But he did the same thing at the ball. He like stood off to the side. He didn't go to her first. He like, it just feels like a big flaw of his that he doesn't just step up. Like he even felt later, like, I feel like a man. And I was like, okay, maybe now is it gonna, and it still didn't hear. And instead of being like an epic book boyfriend where he's like, I don't even need to worry about it because she can do it because she's the best and she's got all the things. Instead, the whole time it was just like, oh, I should have stopped this for her. I need to apologize that I didn't do anything because I didn't have faith that she could do it herself, you know, kind of a thing. Like I was disappointed, I guess, at him for that.
Yeah. I thought it was funny too. Like when he does apologize to her and she's like, that's what you're upset about.
Yeah.
Yep, there's that. And then I just like, I started to feel some like sympathy for Kel'Thane in this scene, which I never thought would happen because they just like did her so dirty and it was like so public and they just made her look insane and
honestly
kind of had been playing into this whole narrative where they could back that up because she's like smoking.
Yeah, I was going to say the first time that she was smoking opium and like you learned that it's like or at least infer that it's because of the ring, some sort of power, whatever, which they still haven't super fully explained how that works. I was like, oh, I'm going to start feeling bad for her. Dang it. I don't want to, but I guess I will. Okay. 51.
51. One thing I never would have guessed is that Nahimi was making the marks under the bed. However, bothered by the fact that she takes issue with Selena not being the most forthcoming with her. And I do take issue with that as well. So if like I said earlier, like if you're withholding information in a friendship or any kind of relationship and acting like you are in a trusting relationship, you played yourself. She's mad at Selena for doing it when she herself was doing it. I don't know. Like, I know one of Lauren's biggest pet peeves in books is a miscommunication trope. I would not say that this is this. This is just a pure non-communication that would have solved a lot earlier on.
I thought that even whenever she came out of the thing with her arm broken, like out of the secret passageway, like she could have done that. She could also have done it with Kale. She could have also done it with Dorian. Like, I know it was under the ruse of protecting them of some sort, but like, they're all in a castle with some murderous something, and you're not going to think to tell the people you care about and are making out with and whatever else. Like, I just, yeah, I'm with you on that.
As soon as Nahimia decided that she was going to be protecting Selena, should have been the moment that she tried to open up into a full reveal friendship with her. Because what is the point of protect? Like, if you're protecting her, that means you know she's not the one doing it. So what is the point of withholding any other information that would be helpful to her aside from? Nope, I can't think of a reason, actually. There's no point. Never mind.
I think my only thought about that was that Nahimia knew that Selena was like really close with Dorian and like Kaol. And even if she trusted Selena, I don't know that she obviously was there because of everything that the king was doing and didn't know if Dorian was like in his back pocket or like what that report situation looks like, or like if she could trust Kaol and Dorian. Cause I think trusting Selena would have come with those other relationships that she had.
I
mean, as well.
I was talking about that last time where it's like, I don't know if I should trust them mm-hmm. because, you know, he was raised by his dad is the king, you know, like he's the guard, like of care, you know, he's loyal to his country. So like, 100% get that perspective from Nahimia.
Yeah, coming from the perspective of being, she was invited, but basically a refugee from another country. Yeah, there's not a lot of room for expounded trust there. But surely there could have been something said to Selena, something worked out between them to make things easier on both of them. But chapter 52, I made a mistake for this whole book with this one quote that said, Selena saying she took another step closer to him, now having to tip her head back to look into his face. And I was like, hold up a minute. I thought Kale was shorter than her. I don't know why I had that impression, but in that moment, I was like, wait a minute. I thought he was a short king and she's looking up to him and I had to reevaluate.
You thought he was shorter than Selena?
Yeah, not by much. I just thought maybe they were same or just a little bit shorter. And it's probably because I had that sort of mopey image of him where he's just like sulked down or whatever. And yeah, I had a weird image of him, I suppose.
No, I have like the captain of the guard. Like I feel like I need to go back and read the descriptions, but like he's got to have, like he's good with swords and he's got to be strong and he's running all the time. So it's like he's probably got like all the abs and whatever else. And then Dorian's over here just reading books, which I like when men read books. So thanks for doing that with us, Kyle. But I like, it's not like he's like tanned and working out and doing the things. Like your perspective on them was switched from what I think I've had. But
yeah, he's not like Lord Farquaad.
Not that short. Come on. No.
The same hair and everything.
A little bit shorter. So whenever it said she looked up at him, I literally had to reread it and be like, wait a minute. But also in that same chapter, Dorian, I feel like just like the way he talks to women has not changed at all, because he went from you gained weight near the start of the book to seeing this injured Selena like lying in bed And he just goes, oh, yeah, you look even worse today, which is the first thing he says when he walks in the room. And I'm like, come on, man. You got to start thinking about it.
And then he asks if he can lay down on her bed because he's exhausted.
Yeah.
After she's like nearly been beaten to death. And
wonder why he got friend zoned.
Traumatizing experience.
It's like the classic case of like, you know, the lady gets sick and then the guy gets sick. And it's like a version of the man flu where he's like, but mine's so much
Dorian's
worse.
Dorian's man flu.
I'm glad you realize that's a thing, Kyle.
I operate on a different scale of sickness. We'll talk about that another day.
The eye roll.
But speaking of him, even in chapter 53, where he is rejected by Selena, I kind of was wondering if this was the first time he's been rejected, because he's always had women fawning all over him. Or was it just the first time he's been rejected by someone he cared about? Because it seemed to affect him, whereas I don't think any other previous relationship or lady he'd been with had probably affected him that much. Either way, get friend zoned, playa.
I don't know. I feel like I wasn't surprised by this. Like, it made sense. I felt like it was coming. I don't know. I wasn't like super team Dorian, I don't think. I think I'm okay that they're not together. I wasn't heartbroken. Mm-hmm. Let's say that much.
I love Dorian, but I wasn't heartbroken over this either. I think my overall thoughts about Dorian and Kale in this book, which, you know, I could go on, but I won't. is that I think like Selena is good for Dorian, but not necessarily the other way around. I think Kale is better for Selena, at least at this point in like their journeys.
Agreed.
Like Kale is the, yes, Kale is the one who's really like supporting her and like letting her excel and like go off queen. But she's probably good for Dorian and like kind of opening his eyes to certain things.
But like whenever it goes back to like the fight where Dorian the whole time is like, when should I step in to save the day? And Kale's like, get up, you can do this, you know, like that in itself. I was like, yes, Kale's the right one.
Yeah.
I am team Kale.
Dorian's still trying to figure it out and Kale's just like, they're doing it.
I was just going to say that neither of them are good for her. That she has been trapped her whole life with this assassin's guild. Who knows who she was like around then? I guess we know Sam was involved at some point, even though we don't hear much about him. She was trapped in a prison and she's been here are like the main parts of her life. And now she's finally to a point where she can explore a little bit. She can go off queen and explore. And like, I don't think either of them, they only have this relationship with her because she was forced into a situation where she had to stay in tight quarters. Like, Kale was her trainer. She was the champion for Dorian. I think she's totally right in saying, like, no relationship right now. I am finally free to explore the land and myself. She's only, like, what, 18 or 19 right now? She's got a lot of stuff to figure out before she knows what is right for her, much less who is right for her.
Go off, Kyle. Yes. You tell him. And I love that she says that. I love that she's like, I want to know what freedom is like first. Like when she's, you know, friend zoning Dorian or whatever. Also, Nehemia reading Selena bedtime stories in this chapter is so cute. Like Nehemia and Kale just like take over taking care of her. And it says Nehemia's like reading to her at that night, which I thought was adorable. And then I was cracking up when Kale is, he like comes in and he asks how her injuries are. And Selena's like, I'm all right. The bandage is just to elicit sympathy now.
I thought she was just trying to like ease him because he seemed like really worried or whatever. It was more for him than it was the truth.
Yeah, it
or whatever.
Was.
That was cute.
That was funny.
Kyle and I were talking about Nehemia being there and how she just like says her friendship name. What does she call her again?
Elentia.
Yes. And she just says that. And it took us both a second to be like, who? Oh, yeah. It's her friendship name. And then I said friendship name and Kyle's like, yeah, like their friendship bracelets. And so that's where the joke came that they have friendship bracelets with their little friendship names on it. And then the king and Duke Parrington have friendship rings, their little matching black rings, and they're all besties.
So cute. Twinsies.
So adorable.
But now because they're black, now I'm just going to be thinking of like mood rings every time.
Absolutely. Okay. Chapter 54. It is just like another one of those just casually dropped sentences where it said, blood ties can't be broken when Elena says that to Selena. And so my initial was like, they're related somehow. That she would say like, you know, I'm not like they can't see you again or something, or like we'll still be connected somehow because blood ties can't be broken. And so maybe that was what I was thinking. Kyle was like, it's not going to be very strong since it would be like a bajillion generations, but I don't know. And then I
actually wasn't sure what that was about.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like if it was directly referring to something, because it that also hadn't been mentioned in the book so far. Like we don't have context for that.
But
right now.
To keep track of all of our notes, we've been using an app where we write in our notes and then we can comment on each other's and whatever. It kind of helps us keep organized. And so I wrote this and my thoughts on it. And Kyle wrote, he wrote, I'm just going to read it, quote, "No, their cycles are just synced. That's when all this started happening. Hashtag sexism."
Look, she went through her cycle in the castle, and all of a sudden, everyone starts dying. Magic's everywhere.
Oh my god!
I'm just saying, but I'm also not just saying. Don't take me for real on that.
Anyway, that was a thing. And then chapter 55, the last chapter, we've made it. She went into the throne room. She signs her life away basically for the next 4 years. But when she was leaving, it says outside the wind bellowed and raged against the glass spire, but it could do nothing to shatter the walls. And that made me think of when they were fighting in the veranda and Elena, to everyone else, it just seemed like a huge gust of wind, all of her power, all of the things that were happening. And it was like, literally blowing Kane down and keeping him over in the corner while they were like solving, you know, like the poison. But really it was like a whole wall of light and all the stuff that was happening. And so this whole, you know, she did this and maybe that was like Elena's power of some sort. I don't know, like trying to communicate with her in some way from the other side. But that's so what cool. I thought. That's what that connection made to me. So I don't know if that's true.
I like that.
But it's also tall. Like they're in a tall glass castle. So like the wind could just be the wind. But
in a Sarah J. Maas
book. The wind is never the wind. I also really, really, really love Kyle. I love Kyle in the end. Just like literally everything they share in these last little chapters. He comes back to her room at some point, and then he's just like, oh, okay, now it's my turn. And he's just like, he's there for her, and they just, I don't know, they're just cute and they're friends. I'm not sorry that Dorian doesn't get the girl. Something else will happen for him that will be great. It's just not Selena. So I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too. My last note about this whole book, which is so crazy, is that I love the last line where Selena just says, "Tell me tomorrow," because this is probably the first time she has ever felt secure enough in one place to say something like this and to think like this can wait for tomorrow and I'm going to be safe until then. And I just love it as the last line for the book, even though it is kind of funny that she's saying this about like finding out who she's supposed to go kill now. Like, it's a line about, you know, finding out what her first job is as the king's assassin. But yeah, but I just love that that was like such a cool way to end the book.
We did it. We made it to the end.
All right. And we are at the end of book one. So Lauren and Kyle, what is your overall rating of the first book? You know, how are you feeling about the series at this point? How is it compared to overall expectations of what you had at the beginning? Are you excited to keep reading?
Yeah. So I gave the book 4 stars. I really like this concept. I like the characters. It's not where I thought it was going from the beginning, but even in the middle, like it, I thought it was going to be, I don't even know what. And then it was about the tests and now it's just super open-ended. I feel like it was a really good setup for something later, but not like a ton of things epic or anything happened in this book. I mentioned it earlier that like a lot of maybe like jaw-dropping moments or like, oh, I can't believe it moments kind of happened, or like, oh, let me go back and read that again. Like, but it would be like a paragraph and then the next chapter was over or they had moved on. It wasn't like my favorite book I've ever read. I don't know. I can't give it 5 stars. I think my favorite part about it is that we all talk about it every week and this is fun for me. So maybe that's where an aww, extra star comes from. Because of us. Oh, and I like Kale. I can't say his name. And I like Kale. So I'm putting that at the end. I'm team Kale all the way. So there's that.
I am a bit harsher on it. I give it like a 3, low 3, high 2 perhaps. Like a 2.7 is what my brain is saying. But that in itself seems too low for a book that's part of a series that's as popular as this one. But that's just based on me reading it. I feel like the locations and the characters were pretty one-dimensional. What backstory we got was inserted momentarily to sort of force emotion and into what was otherwise a straightforward story. Like that scene with Sam, sure, that's sad for like a chapter to think about, but then it never really comes up again, and I don't have to think about her past again. The assassin that we had, Selena, who is an assassin only by deeds held outside this story, is supposedly the most feared in the land, not just the city, the whole land, at the age of 18, but then also proceeds to make most of her decisions as a typical 18-year-old would, not very much assassin thought patterns thrown in. I feel like Dorian existed solely for her in terms of the story. He only bred puppies so she could have a puppy. He played pool so they could flirt together. And in the same way, like, Kale existed to further the idea that she was incredibly dangerous, but ultimately lovable person, just to have another guy, because gotta, you know, get the love triangle in there. And in the other era, like the other areas too, like I said, the bad guys, the king was a jerk, not much about him. Kane was a jerk. Duke, jerk. Nothing more to it, really. Just three jerks given no real motivation other than being mean to Selena or Lillian or Lentia or whatever you want to call her. Even the locations I felt like were pretty meaningless. The prison that sucks for everyone in it, except for our main character to prove that she's BA, again, by actions that didn't happen in front of us. The glass castle is glass. That's about it on that. Nothing really came from the glass in this book. No thung ever came of that, even though it was mentioned again at the end of the book. Hidden library, nothing. Nobody mentioned that. The mysterious clock tower, never heard of it again. The hidden passageways were like good for her to get around. There was a riddle in there, I'm pretty sure. Time's rift, I spent like a lot of time off it. Pretty sure it's an anagram for I am the first. That's the only thing that can make sense to me is why it was down there, and like a hint at maybe them being the first king and queen or whatever. But again, no resolution there. So that makes me hope that she has planned out the books and there will be more in the future. But overall, I feel like the book suffered from the show don't tell rule. I was told a lot of things about people and places, but I wasn't ever shown why I should believe it. I was just told their story and be like, trust me, that's how it works.
Interesting.
Tell us how you really feel. My gosh.
I will.
Wow.
That was intense.
As for being excited, though, I do look forward to reading the books because I do hope some of that resolution will come. This book itself didn't give it to me, so I feel like I really want the future books to expound on it, which is why I was talking earlier about hopefully she's planned out this world, because I want answers to all these questions.
I want to hear what your guys's initial rating was. I mean, maybe you have a different rating for your reread, but like the first time you read it, what did you rate it? And then what did you rate it now?
John doesn't have like Goodreads or anything. And this was the first book that he had read with me. So I don't know that he really... Oh, yeah. Well, he actually wrote an article about this series after we had finished it.
Yeah. I'll read you what I wrote. I think so.
We will link the article in the show notes on this episode if you want to read John's overall thoughts on Throne of Glass. This was a spoiler-free article, right? Yeah, this is a John's spoiler-free review of Throne of Glass, trying to convince people to read the series.
Because it was spoiler-free, what I wrote was like very bare bones, but it shows that I gave it a 4 out of 5. And what I said is, because how I wrote the article is I wrote book one as the Assassin's Blade, since that's chronological. But for Throne of Glass, I wrote, Throne of Glass picks up a short time after the end events of Assassin's Blade. It introduces new characters that will play a key role in the series in more ways than you might guess. This book seems slow to ramp up, but Sarah J. Maas uses the slower pace to develop new relationships and continues to grow Selena's character. You also see a bit of inner conflict with Selena as she wrestles with the events of her past and effects they have on her decisions. Pretty general.
I don't think I wrote like a review for this in Goodreads when we finished the first book, but I did give it I gave it 4 stars. And I think even on my reread, I was thinking about this earlier today. Like, I think I probably would give it 4 stars still on a reread. It is really cool, like on a reread, seeing like all the little seeds planted in this first book that turn into stuff that's like so cool later in the series, and just seeing like where these characters start out and kind of where they're going to go, without, you know, obviously without giving anything away. But I do really love that aspect of it. So I feel like first read and reread, I would still probably give it 4 stars. This first book, you know, by itself isn't like a life-changing book, you know, but I think just where she takes it is really cool. So I'm excited for you guys to get there.
Yeah. So do you guys have any theories for book two or the rest of the series, or maybe any specific characters that you guys maybe thought of?
I sat here for a really long time and thought about this, and I just feel like I have absolutely no idea. This book was just kind of wrapped up. Like, there wasn't any big cliffhangers. Like, it could honestly just be like, oh, tell me tomorrow. And then it's like, oh, she got to do, you know, like, do the things. That's the only book out there kind of a vibe. Like, yeah, the king is a jerk and we're going to figure that out. And I don't know. It just wasn't like, oh, I need to go pick up the next book to find out what happens, you know, kind of vibe. So I don't know. I assume she will be the champion, but for all I know, it's going to jump 4 years later and now she's free or something. Like, I have no clue. I don't feel like I want to make any predictions. So I am very curious about whenever she was fighting with Cain and they were having like the demons, I guess is what they were, like the creatures from the other side were calling her by a different name. Very curious as to what that is and what that means. And then also the mysterious mark. We didn't talk about that at all, but like whatever the mark is that appeared on her forehead that Nehemia seemed to know or recognize and the king clearly saw. I don't know if he knows what it means, but like clearly knows that something is there. And so maybe that's how she was able to like put a call out to the other side with like Elena coming or something. There's clearly something going on with that, but that's the only big like mystery that I'm leaving this book.
Yeah. Like Nehemia said, she doesn't know what it means. And then I think for the king, it said that like, cause Nehemia asked Elena if she knew what it was. And she was like, no, do you? Nehemia was like, nope.
Has Elena even seen it? Because it's not like she could just pull out her phone to put the selfie camera on. Like,
she was like, what mark?
Yeah. I don't think she's seen it, but it was like the second time Nehemia had noticed it.
When was the first time?
It was like earlier in the book. I don't remember.
It was how Nehemia like looked at her for a second. And she said she thought she noticed something, but she didn't say anything about it. It was like a sentence or two.
Yeah, at the clock tower, I think, because Helena was like, do I have something on my face? Like, why are you not looking at my eyes?
Yeah, and Nehemia was like, are you sure you don't know anything about these marks? Because like, there's one on your forehead.
I think it says the king was like rather well-versed in word marks, but he didn't know what that mark was.
So you mentioned the name that she's called by the demons. One of my like mostly jokey theories is that she doesn't get any more names because three is enough. And I don't want any more.
She got a lot of names.
Like in one book for her to have three? Come on, you're getting greedy. I also hope something terrible happens to her because so far I feel like she's gotten away with so much. I get the feel of like a character where nothing bad is supposed to happen to her. And like, granted, yeah, her parents are dead and she was in jail and tortured or whatever, but everything that's happened to her has led to better things. It's never been like,
aside from all that,
but that's normal stuff for main character. Like if your parents aren't dead, you're not going to be anything in a fantasy book. But I don't know. I just feel like there's been no lasting consequences that I feel like, I don't feel like she lost anything in this book. And I didn't get to like read through how she copes with loss or anything like that. There were no lasting consequences. She was not hurt. Sort of like Lauren said, if there were consequences, they lasted for like a chapter. And then the next one was, now it's Christmas and everything's good again. And I'm going to go to a ball and that sort of thing. Like, I just want more reason to connect, I guess, to the characters.
We were talking about it earlier when we were mentioning all her bajillion names, is that like being on Instagram and TikTok and whatever, like you see, I know there's other characters in this series. I know a name enough to know to skip that TikTok so that I don't get a spoiler for this series, you know, that kind of thing. And so I did say, like, I wonder if maybe one of this name the demons are calling her is actually one of these other character names. And I just didn't realize this whole time that it's also Selena or something. Like maybe she is one of these other names that I just don't know that yet.
I remember like having a conversation about this with John, like when I first read the series, because I had seen so many like Throne of Glass things. There's like all these main character names that you see all the time. And I was like, where are all of these people? Like, and so now every time I have friends read the series, I'm like, it's so funny because there are characters who end up being like main characters in the book who don't even show up until like book three. Like there's several, I think, that are literally, it's like book three, a bunch of people start showing up that end up being a big deal.
Book three is not Assassin's Blade.
Air of Fire. I mean, yeah. Assassin's Blade is the prequel, but we will read it third. Yes.
Because we're new to this. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Because I had heard the third book is like, everybody's like, oh, the third book's where it picks up. But then we weren't sure if that was the third book in our reading order, which I think it's going to be the fourth.
Yeah. So Air of Fire is when like a bunch of other characters start getting introduced and stuff. It definitely is a lot of like setup in this book for things that are coming.
Which is interesting for a first book. Like, I feel like usually a first book in a series is like epic and huge because like you want to sell your first book. And then the second book is often the like setup for the rest of the series kind of a thing. So I feel bad like talking bad about a Sarah J. Maas book because I just usually love them so much. But like, I guess I just was maybe like all the hype is for the series and I've just only read one book. And so I'm just feeling underwhelmed by the amount of hype I was supposed to feel for reading Throne of Glass, which I just did. I read Throne of Glass, but I have not read Throne of Glass, the series. And so that's must be what I'm missing. So I guess we will see.
Well, we did it. We did 1/8 of it. We finished the first book.
1/8. That sounds insane.
It's actually probably less than that because the other books are so long. But we are so excited for you guys to finish the rest of this series. John and I are like so pumped to reread all of it with you because it really does get like so epic. And so I'm excited that we are in this like setup part of the story and we get to dive right into Crown of Midnight. So join us for our next episode. We will be covering the second book of the Throne of Glass series. This will be Crown of Midnight. And our next episode will cover chapters 1-18. And while you're here, before you leave this episode, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're watching. Make sure you're following us on Instagram and TikTok for all of our updates. Check out our website, betweenpagesandfriends.com, for all of our merch and our links and contact information. And then if you are looking for more community, more bonus content, early access to new episodes, merch discounts, and a bajillion other things, check out our Patreon. We have a few different tiers on there as well. Thank you so much for listening and for being here and for reading with us. We will see you in Crown of Midnight.
Yay! Bye!
Okay.
Bye. We did it!
Bye-bye now!
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.